Welcome to Computing Lives, an author's podcast from the IEEE Annals of the History of Computing. The Annals documents the stories of the information age. It publishes stories of technological innovation, stories of commerce, stories of computing institutions, and finally, stories of computing people. This podcast is about a computing woman. In 1946, the largest and most sophisticated electronic computing device was the ENIAC, which the designers pronounced ENIAC at the University of Pennsylvania. One of the very first ENIAC computers was Kathleen McNulty. Kay McNulty was born in Donegal, Ireland on February 12, 1921, and came to America with her family in October 1924. At the time, she spoke only Gaelic. She attended parochial grade school in Chestnut Hill in the northwest corner of Philadelphia, Hallahan Catholic Girls High School. Her math courses there included 2 years of algebra, plane and solid geometry, and trigonometry. Finally, the Chestnut Hill College for Women. She graduated in June 1942 as one of three mathematics majors in a class of 92 graduates. Her math courses included college algebra, math history, integral calculus, spherical trigonometry, differential calculus, and finally, partial differential equations. She tells her own story as follows. By the time I reached my third year of college, I started looking around for some type of occupation that could use a mathematics major. I didn't want teaching. Insurance companies' actuarial positions required a master's degree, and they seldom hired women, I later found out. The best bet was some business training for me. So I took many business courses as I could squeeze in, business law, economics, statistics. Just after graduation, I happened to see an ad in the daily paper. The Army was looking for women with a degree in mathematics right here in Philadelphia. I called Frances Bylus and Josephine Benson, my fellow math majors. For some now forgotten reason, Josephine Benson couldn't meet with us. In any event, Fran and I went in together for the interview, and we were both accepted 1 week later as computers. The pay was not spectacular, but at the time, with no work experience, it was very welcome. We received notice to report to work at the Moore School. Our new office had once been a large classroom. It now housed some 12 women and 4 men, all busily occupied with desk calculators and large sheets of columned paper. We were introduced to the group who had recently arrived from the Aberdeen Proving Ground. They were busy calculating trajectories for firing tables. I recall meeting Lila Todd, Willa Wyatt, Ella Mae Henderson, and Mary Gibbons. The presence of the women in this men-only school caused a lot of rubbernecking at the water fountains. Of the men in the group, I remember Joe Natrella and John Halberton, the man who was in charge of the unit. The key to doing the job was a knowledge of numerical integration, a topic well outside the mathematics curriculum at Chestnut Hill College. When we confessed we didn't even know what the term meant, we were each given a copy of a very thick book by Scarborough and told to read certain chapters. Reading the assigned material was not much help. It was not until we were given our own calculators and the huge sheets of paper shown step by step how the integration was done that we began to realize what was expected of us. And then we got to work. Within a few weeks, we had learned enough to be transferred to the basement of the Moore School, where we were introduced to the differential analyzer. The room housing the analyzer was the only air-conditioned room at the Moore School. Because of this, Fran and I quickly learned the names of the Moore School personnel who came in to cool off during the very hot summer of 1942. The differential analyzer had been loaned by the University of Pennsylvania to the Aberdeen Proving Ground for the duration of the war. Professor Cornelius Weingart was in charge at the Moore School, with Joseph Chaplin, a former student of John Mockley at Yersinius College, who was in charge of changes and maintenance of the machine. That summer of 1942, two young men from Aberdeen, Seymour Goodman and Ten Ricci, were in charge of operating that differential analyzer. Operation included setting up the boundary conditions of the integrators, repairing or replacing the strings and bands on the torque amplifiers, and guiding the arbitrary functions from input tables. Finally, punching out specific values at different times during the trajectories, such as when it left the gun, when it was at certain points in flight, and when it struck the ground. These two men and a young woman trained Fran and me as operators for the differential analyzer, so that in a short time we were able to take over an entire work shift. We worked from 8 a.m. till 4:30 p.m. for 2 weeks, and then changed over from 4 p.m. till 11:30 p.m. for 2 weeks. Within a month or so, the computing unit upstairs at the first floor of the Moore School was enlarged by the addition of some young women who had been trained in math at the college level by some aging ex-teachers from the Moore School. In this group was Betty Snyder and Marilyn Westcoff. Some of these new recruits were sent to join Fran and me in the analyzer room. By early fall of 1942, a new set of classes, taught by Del Goldstein, Mary Mockley, and Mildred Kramer, was begun in a building at the intersection of Walnut and 34th Street and Woodland Avenue. My understanding was that Adele Goldstein had been hired primarily to recruit mathematics majors throughout the area, including Hunter College in New York, her alma mater. The supply was slim, so the next best alternative was to recruit some women who had some college math, or at least 4 years of high school math, and to train them in the fundamentals of basic college mathematics. By July 1943, Goldman and Ricci had been drafted. The analyzer room staff had been enlarged by quite a few young women coming from the newly set up classes, and Fran and I had been split up so that we were in charge of two separate shifts. We continued in this fashion until VE Day. We worked 6 days a week, every day except Sunday, with only two holidays, Christmas and the 4th of July. Each year we would earn 10 and later 16 days leave, for which we would be paid, or we could take as vacation days after the war ended. Our performance was evaluated and we were given raises every 6 months. The unit that was working on the first floor of the Moore School outgrew its space and moved to a pair of three-story houses at 3436 Walnut Street, the site of the present-day University of Pennsylvania Library. At one point, there were about 100 women on two shifts, with those on the incoming shift continuing the work on the incomplete trajectory computations from the previous shift until each trajectory was completed. Kathleen McNulty would end up having a lifetime of associations with the ENIAC, as she married one of the original ENIAC designers, John Mockley. You've been listening to Computing Lives. This podcast was based upon research done by Barclay Fritz for an article on the ENIAC women that was published in Volume 18, Number 3 of the IEEE Annals of the History of Computing. More about the annals and other publications from the Computer Society can be found at www.computer.org. Click on Technical Magazines. Other Computer Society podcasts can be found at www.computer.org/podcasts. If you have any comments, you can send them to podcasts@computer.org. We'd love to hear from you. The music for this podcast came from the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.